do it. It's not just a matter of the individual, but it's a matter of the Ashgacha as well. It's a matter of God as well. You have to understand, the O, here the word O has two different meanings. There's a functional meaning, and then there is an effect, an emotional effect related to it. That's the, that's what, the word O, a yoke, is something which guides the animal. Now, in the regular world, when a person is guided or guides himself, he's in tremendous pain because he has to fight tremendous emotions. But Torah, when the person is guided by Torah, it's a different phenomenon. It's functionally it's an O, but it's not emotionally an O. It's a different kind of a different kind of phenomenon. The old Torah is totally different. As a matter of fact, you see the Gemara says, Chazal said, does the Rambam mention? Yeah. Okay, very good. Take the Rambam. V'amru aparek ol Torah. Shama ein Torah. Yeah, Shama ein Torah and a Shemayim veini sovla. V'amru chorus al haluchos. The Pasuk says that these words were chorus, were engraved on the luchos. Chorus al haluchos. Rotsa lomar hachorus mitoldos hazman v'inyonei hamalochim l'mishe mekabel v'osam ha'shenichter al haluchos. The Gemara says, "Ein loch ben chorin el mishosik b'tara." Al tikri choras al luchos el cheras. Cheras is freedom. So where's the situation of total freedom? The situation of total freedom is the situation of Torah. Why is it an O? It's an O because what happens is that the chokhmas haTorah guides his emotions, but it's not the pain of an O. It's the function of an O. That's the difference. Cheras, freedom. That's what the Rambam says. Okay. So what about the idea now, the second aspect, the idea that God, how does God come into the picture? Because you see, the Rishonim mentioned this.
Rambam
mentioned
it. He asked the question, yeah. Why does it seem that?
So what's the answer?
It seems like a reward-punishment situation.
Right. It seems like a reward-punishment situation, right? Yeah. So what's the answer?
Like it seems that you're learning because you're going to get the goodies. It's going to be good for it.
That's right. Seems like that. The answer is that here, again, we come across the Rambam's Shita of Hashgacha. What is the Rambam's Shita of Hashgacha? Hashgacha is a natural phenomenon. But the Hashgacha only works with regard to it follows the lines of the person's life. In other words, when a person lives this way, when a person lives in this manner, and he partakes of the Chochmas HaTorah, and the other things are secondary, it's not just a matter of he has reduced them in his mental framework, but the Ashgacha continues to work to reduce them further. That's what the pasuk says. That b'shosha oskin. What's the pasuk? Two pasukim. The Gemara says in Brachos. So one pasuk is that others do. When Klal Yisrael is following God's will, so then the malach tanasas ideachem. Others do their work. What does it mean? It's Ashgacha. Ashgacha means that a person who lives with those ideas, the Ashgacha works along the same lines that he is living. The way he lives philosophically causes reality to bend to that way of life. That's the way it works. That's the way the Ashgacha works. It's a Chazal. Chazal say, "Bederech she'odom rotzeh leilech, malich nasa." It means to say that a person who lives in that frame of mind philosophically, that insofar as he lives that way philosophically, he relates to the Ashgacha in a certain, he relates to God in a certain way. In that way, he increases his Ashgacha, and the Ashgacha works alongside him in that particular style of life. That's the Havtacha the Torah. So if he removes the burden internally, insofar as he's concerned, the burden is continued to be removed by God externally through the Ashgacha. The Ashgacha works, it's a Haftacha that the Ashgacha works in line with the person's life. That's the Rambam in the end of Shemitah V'Yovah. The Rambam in the end of Shemitah V'Yovah. That's the idea of Shevet Levi. What is Shevet Levi? Shevet Levi was separated and it was removed from the Klal Yisrael. They don't earn any money. And the Rambam says, "Lo ovdim b'kach gufan," they don't work, and the rest of Klal Yisrael works, and they support them. And Shevet Levi sits and learns Torah. And the Rambam says it's not just Shevet Levi, but any individual who removes from himself the burdens of this man, The Ola Cheshbonos, the Rambam says, God ensures that he has some way of making a living in this world where he does not have to give up Talmud Torah. That's what the Rambam, the end of Hilchos Midiyot. What does it mean? That's precisely the same thing it means over here. It means that the way the person lives, if a person reaches that level philosophically, and he relates to the material world and to Torah in this special way, so then the Ashgacha, that's the way the Ashgacha works. He becomes in line with the Ashgacha, and the Ashgacha works from the outside to protect his situation. That's the Aftar. Ashgacha joins his philosophical trend. That's the way the Ashgacha works. The more a person, the higher a person is intellectually in the way he lives in Derech of Chachma, the higher level he is, the closer he is to the Ashgacha, and the Ashgacha supports him. He's more under the Ashgacha. It's a natural phenomenon. It's a natural phenomenon. It's not an ace. It's a natural phenomenon. The Mishnah is expressing a natural phenomenon. It's a natural process. It's not an ace. We're not talking about an ace. It's a natural process. Insofar as he lives in the way of Chachma, he is closer to God, and since he's closer to God, God supports his way of life, and therefore he can continue this way of life. That's the Ashgacha. That's the whole idea of the Ashgacha. It's a natural phenomenon. It's not supernatural. Yes. No, there is no property. You asked me that question once. My question. Why isn't that considered an ace? The fact that the Ashgacha, the Ashgacha practice, why isn't it considered an ace? There's two reasons why. First of all, essentially what we're saying is that it's not considered a nace because a nace, the main idea trying to get across is, insofar as not a nace, means like this. That the laws of nature stem from God. God is the source of the laws of nature. Now, insofar as the person is on a higher level, and rises above the law and has a closer relationship to God, so therefore his existence is of a different quality. In other words, there is a spiritual part of man and then there is a physical part of man. Now, insofar as he's physical, so then he's subject to the laws of nature because he's a physical being. But insofar as he's spiritual, he's directly tied to the source of Chachma, which is God. And insofar as he's tied to the source of Chachma, the physical does not interfere. He's removed from the physical. It is this relationship which results in the fact that that there is a change in the physical. That's what I mean by natural. And by natural, I mean that it is because of his relationship to God who is the source of both physical and metaphysical phenomena. You see. Now, once he reaches a metaphysical plane, he's related to the source of the universe in a very special way. In that relationship, of the Chachma is essential. And since the Chachma is essential, the physical naturally cannot interfere with it. It has to do with his stature insofar as the universe is concerned. By universe, I mean the metaphysical and physical. You understand what I mean? In other words, what I'm saying is it's not an extraneous intervention. It's a result of being close to the source of Chachma. When one is close to the source of Chachma, so the physical cannot affect him. Because he's close to the source of all the phenomena. That's what I mean. I mean, it's not as if God just comes in. You have to understand, it's not as if you have a childish understanding of Ashgacha. It means that God just steps in and stops it. That's not what it means. It means that the whole universe is created that way. The whole universe is created that the metaphysical the metaphysical will intercept, will prevent the physical from interfering with it. If a person is on a metaphysical plane, if a person on that metaphysical plane is related to the source of the universe in a higher way, so that the physical which stems from God cannot interfere with that. Do you understand what I'm saying? See, it's not a suspension in terms of an extraneous interruption, that the laws of nature are suspended. The suspension stems from the fact that he is related to a higher form, a higher entity. That entity, once he's related to that entity, you see, then the physical simply cannot affect that. That relationship is more real, that is more real than the physical. That's what it means. So therefore, the physical can't interfere. It's not as if God steps in and stops the different processes. That's a law in the universe. This is the way the universe was created, that the metaphysical is on a higher plane than the physical. If you are in line with the metaphysical, the physical simply doesn't have the ability. It would be like two forces in physics. We have something inferior and something that's a greater force. The inferior cannot affect the greater. Just like you have laws in physics that way, there is a law in terms of the whole system of the universe that way. And God is the source of Chachma. Chachma is the ultimate reality. A person who's in line with that reality, the physical cannot affect it. It's not a miracle. By not a miracle, I mean it's not an extraneous intervention. Specific events that occurred were specific interventions, so Chazal say, were set up from Sheish Shemei Bereishis. Why do they have to say they were set up from Sheish Shemei Bereishis? Because the way God works the universe, it's all worked out by a certain scheme. Now however, since the God knew that this will occur, you can't even say God knew this will occur because time is not. We have to use a metaphor. But the point is that why does a nation have to happen to Klal Yisrael? Because there you're dealing with a different plane. You're dealing with a metaphysical plane. Metaphysical plane takes preference over the physical. The physical laws have their place in nature. The physical laws have their place, but the metaphysical is a higher law. Man can relate to the metaphysical. Man relates to the metaphysical, and the physical is not burdened with the physical. The difference between the there's also a difference between a nace and between this state. The difference like is that in a nace, a property of the object is changed. For instance, the nace that by Yamsa, that the water stood like pillars. Now that means that a new property was added to a substance of water. It became a solid. That is a nace. That we call a nace. That is a breach in the law of nature. It's a breach in the law of nature because there is a change in one of the properties of the objects. A property was endowed with a certain object. So then that's something that has to be Mishesh Shemei Bereishis. That's why it has to be Mishesh Shemei Bereishis. But Ashgacha for people who are on a high level is not Mishesh Shemei Bereishis. That's a part of the natural law. In the scheme and order of things, the way things are organized and the way things work out, there is no breach in the. It's only a change in the causal chain, but it's not a change in the actual property of an object. That's not considered a nace. It's for that reason that the Ramban says that where the Ashgacha works, the Ashgacha usually works, insofar as the natural law is concerned, belev Adam, in the heart of man. Insofar as people are concerned with that's really the story of Purim. See, in Purim, what is the whole story of where was the nace over there? Where was the nace? Balailahu nadashnas amalach. Insofar as the human likes and dislikes is concerned. So in that area is the primary area, the Ramban says, where the Ashgacha takes place. That's what he says, yeah. The primary area where the Ashgacha takes place. That in the human mind, as far as the human mind is concerned. Because it's not a breach in the law of nature. It's simply but it's not changing the property of an object.
But the objects relate differently. The objects do relate differently in Ashgacha.
With regard to Nisim, I would say that insofar as the Ashgacha is concerned, it's a natural phenomenon. It's a natural phenomenon, insofar as the Ashgacha is concerned. And the natural phenomenon is that the metaphysical prevails over the physical. That's the way it is. Then there's another situation where you have intervention by God. Intervention by God is it depends. There's two types of intervention. There's intervention which takes place in terms of the Nisim Galuyim, like Kriyas Yamsuf. Then there's intervention like Nes Purim, which is intervention through the minds of through the mind of an individual. It's less of an ace. But that's insofar as interventions are concerned. That's insofar as Klal Yisrael is concerned, because there's a different kind of Hashgacha to Klal Yisrael. Insofar as the individual is concerned, that's not a nace. It's not a nace because it's a natural result of being in line with the metaphysical, and the metaphysical is by nature prevails over the physical. It's a different kind of phenomenon. Now, if you'll ask me, insofar as the last point that we mentioned, insofar as the Holocaust is concerned, I would say, once again, that this, what we're saying over here is a fact insofar as the natural order is concerned. On the whole, this is the way it is. That's what the Ramban says. On the whole, the life of the Tzaddik, you can't compare the life of the Tzaddik to the life of the Rasha. Even if the Tzaddik was poor and he only had bread, I assure you, he enjoyed his bread more than the Rasha enjoyed all his sumptuous meals, and he enjoyed his time and his life you can't compare it. The problem is that the person doesn't understand it, so it seems ridiculous to him. But if a person knows what the experience is, he understands that this is the way it is. So the life of the Tzaddik always is superior to the life of the Rasha. It goes without saying. This special Hashgacha is a natural phenomena that always accompanies him. But the benefit of the accompaniment is only insofar as he can continue to pursue the good. The life of the Rasha is the one that a person has to feel sorry for, not the Tzaddik. The reason why people ask the question is because down deep, they really believe that the life of the material is really a better life. Otherwise, it's no kasha whatsoever. As I showed you, a person dies at 30 years old, so he says, so what? He had a great life, much better. The Russia suffered. He had a great life. And the only thing that bothered him was the fact that he has to take care of himself. Now he's nifter, and that's it. He doesn't have that problem. So it's wonderful. And so far as the Holocaust is concerned, I will repeat once more. The Holocaust, I say one thing. The problem with people trying to handle the question of the Holocaust is that they're trying to do something which is way above their abilities. Chazal were able to say why the second Mikdash was destroyed. Because Chazal had insight, and Chazal had knowledge. And they were Chachomim, like the Rambam says, Chachomim be'emes. They understood life. And they were able to say why such a tragedy had to occur. The people who are trying to analyze the Holocaust are simpletons. They really don't have any knowledge. And they have no right to place themselves in such a position, because who are they to analyze what occurs by God? But the reason why they analyze it or attempt to analyze it is because they cannot recognize, they're unable to accept something which goes against their emotions, a very powerful degree. And the reason why they can't understand that they can't even approach it in the right manner. They don't have the right approach. I mean, the approach should be like Chazal say. What caused it? What was responsible for it? Not that nothing was responsible for it. What they're trying to say is nothing was responsible for it. That's less din v'less dayan, that's kfirah. If it occurred, the Holocaust occurred, it means that there was something seriously detrimentally wrong with Klal Yisrael. What it is, we may not at this point be capable of seeing. But to say otherwise is to be a kofer beker. Okay? What it is, we don't have the chokhmah. We have to be able to realize humility. We may not have the knowledge to know what exactly was wrong. You know, a person does a chay, it's not just if a person belonged to another kind of a man-made religion. So in a man-made religion, the man-made religions maintain that as long as you're good, so that's enough. In Yadis, in God's religion, doesn't work that way. You could be very good, but you still are lacking the Chachmah. You don't understand. Without Chachmah, I mean, it's nothing. So why the Holocaust occurred, we must say at this point one conclusion, that we just do not have the knowledge as to what the chait of Klal Yisrael was at the time. But that definitely something was responsible for it. What it is, we do not know.
Even the rabbis.
Years and years of Talmud Torah that Rabbi Akiva had, the way he learned and who his wife was. So I mean, the life that he had, I don't think that anyone can understand or comprehend the enjoyment of the life of a Rabbi Akiva. Because we're not on that level. We have a little bit of intellectual enjoyment once in a while. We experience intellectual enjoyment, that's something. But could a person imagine what a bliss it would be like to have a constant enjoyment like that for over 60, 70, 80 years? Rabbi Akiva lived to be a very, very old man, according to Chazal. So now, what happened when Rabbi Akiva died, so they so physically they tortured him. But the Gemara says that Rabbi Akiva didn't take it that way. He says, Kol yama yisim etztar al pasuk zeh, masa yavai liyadi v'akayimena. So it always bothers me, this one pasuk where it says, they should love God, v'chol levav v'chol v'chol nafshecha. So he said, he always wondered, he always was etztar al pasuk to, because what he felt was that to experience such a phenomena would raise him to a higher level. So at the end of his life, he was Moshe Nefesh al Kiddush Hashem. You look at it as a horrible, terrible tragedy. Where Rabbi Akiva was looking in it, he was Makababa. And as a matter of fact, he was thankful that he was able to do it. So here's a man who reaches the climax of his whole life by dying through Kiddush Hashem Shemayim. And he's happy to confront it. I mean, this is not a tragedy. Not a tragedy, certainly from his standpoint. Our emotions that make it, that render it a tragedy. Of course, our emotions are very powerful, and the more, you know, the more the thing that we picture in our mind goes against our emotions, the more horrible it becomes. But you have to understand that you're not talking about the same picture for the individual who experienced it. It is a different picture. The only thing is that we have in our teva, in our nature, is ingrained the fact that the way we see things is the universal. And it's very hard for us to see something that we consider absolutely terrible, horrible, as possibly being something good. Because we're not in the mind of Rabbi Akiva. But to Rabbi Akiva, in Rabbi Akiva's state, in his situation, it was not a tragedy. He was happy. It was makabla like a bracha. So you have to understand that when you talk about the life of a tzaddik, you must look at the life the way the tzaddik is. Only God could know exactly what the most beneficial thing for a tzaddik is at the time. We don't know. But we tend to look at it in our own small framework and attach values that we simply are stuck in, that we can't get out of. That's because of our own imperfection. Yes? A lot of things are possible with regard to the answer for the halakha. Yeah, right. But I'm saying this. A person should not feel... The reason why I say I'd rather leave it without answering it is because a person should not feel that they have to answer those things. A person should feel they have to answer. There's no necessity. God isn't worried. You don't have to protect God. You don't have to protect anybody. There's no need to answer. If you feel that you sense a need to immediately give an answer, then there's something wrong. So let's let it go. The second best makers, they were destroyed by Sinas Finam. So Chazal learned something from it. Mm-hmm. Other people learn something from it. Hopefully.
You have to know what the specific is to learn from it.
And the event per se, right, it's true. The event per se is justified according to justice. The reason why people can't understand the Holocaust is because it's their own generation, and they're arrogant. They can't believe that there may be something detrimentally wrong with themselves. That's why it causes such a tremendous problem. It was, as far as the Akiva is concerned, it was necessary in order to be able to attack properly under the circumstances, to know how to view the situation. And he had a right to make that decision. But the fact is that since we know that this type of, to know exactly how this is going to occur, even Rabbi Akiva wasn't on the level to understand it. And he had to make that decision at the time, but as it turned out, it was wrong. But Rabbi Akiva did not make that decision because he had that, he was overcome by a primitive desire for satisfying instinct. It was because he had to make a decision at the time. He had to know how to conduct himself. It was a political question. And based upon the way he understood it, even though it was an area of conjecture, a gadol sometimes has to go by that. And he had no choice but to act that way. Now, the reason why I mention that is because last week we were discussing the Holocaust, and I noticed there are some people that believe that in the end of Devarim, where the Torah talks about the Achris Hayomim, so it starts in Vayelach, and it says Vayomer Hashem al Moshe Incha Shelchev Malasecho. That the nation will turn after the strange gods of the land, and they will abandon me. Then it says, V'chorapi bo v'yomahu v'azavtim, v'estati fonei mehem, and I will hide my face from them, and they will be consumed. U'mitza'uhu ro'os rabos v'tzoros. And they will find themselves with many and very evil and very great tragedies. And they'll say, Vama Bayamu Lasea that day, Halo ki al kiena lakai bekiri mitsuni arasaila. The reason why these troubles found me is because God is not among our midst. Vanochi, and God says, Vanochi haster aster pone bayomaho. I will hide my face on that day, al kol haro asher asa, kifono el Elohim acherim. Then the pasuk says, Vata kisvu lachem es hashira zos. Now you should write this shira, v'lamdo es bnei Yisrael, and teach it to the Jews, sima b'fiyam, place it in their mouths, l'man t'yali hashira zos, in order that this shira should be la'ed, as a testimony of bnei Yisrael. Okay? Now, what does it mean? It means to say that, as the Mefarshim say, and I believe the Sforno says it, the Sforno really explains it, then it repeats it again. Let's go for it. Ki avienu al adom asher nishbati la'avosov, zov aschola v'dvash, v'ochol asov v'doshin, ufono el Elohim acherim v'avodim v'niyatsuni v'hefer esbrisi. Again, that the Jews will turn away from God and turn to strange gods, and they will break my covenant. And it'll be when these terrible tragedies will befall them. And this shira will testify before them, and will be before them as a testimony. Because it will not be forgotten from their children. Because I know their nature. Before I bring them to the land, but this will occur to them after they come to the land. And the Sforno says, the Sforno explains that what does it mean that this shira will be for an aid? So he says that he says in Pasuk Chavav, and that's why Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded to write the Shira. What is the Shira? The Shira is the Shira Sazino. Again, Moshe told him to take the Sefer Torah, and then he says Hakilu Alayis Kol Zikn before Hazino. Hakilu Alayis Kol Zikn Shavtechem Shatrechem Adaber Vaznei Meisad Vam Ela Va'ida Bamas Hashemayim Vesaras. And Moshe Rabbeinu says Ki Adati Achrei Mosi Ki Hashfeis Tashlisun. The Satim and Aderech, you'll turn away from the way which I commanded you. Then he says, "The Koros Eschem Haroa Ba'achris Ayonim," and the evil will befall you at the end of times. Achris Ayonim is a clear reference to Yimasa Mashiach. Kisasu Asara Beini Ad Hashem Lachisa B'Masa Yedecha. So the Sforno says, "Vahoya B'Hashem B'Chol La'Eid." What does it mean? It'll be a testimony. Yoid Shiyadati Shetazu Es Toras Akel Yisbarach. It will testify to the fact that you will leave the Torah of God. Just a second. I'm sorry. I will mention in that Shira. Va'oid bochem shiyadati shetasu ba'ofen shetikra lachem hara. He says, what's the purpose of writing the Shira? So that when this terrible tragedy that does occur to you, so you shouldn't attribute the occurrence to a chance happening. But you should relate it to the fact that you have corrupted yourself. The sitnu lev loshev, and you should So he says, in other words, in order that you should be able to recognize when the tragedy occurs, that it occurred because you deviated from the Torah. And therefore, you should take to heart this fact, and you should understand that the reason why it occurs is because you deviated from the Torah, so that you should return and do tshuva. And then you have the Shira Sazino. And in the Shira Sazino, it mentions many, many ideas. And then it goes through the history of Klal Yisrael. But then it mentions again the tragedy. It's in Reviv. Then it says Astir Fanai Mehem. That's referring to the Achris Hayamim. And Amati Athayim Ashbisa Me'eno Zichra. Then it goes into Luchach Moyaschilu Zos Yavinu Lachrisam Echa Yidof Echad Elef Ushnaim in Isra Vava. Says the other nations would understand, they'd know that something strange has occurred. How is it possible that one should chase 1,000 and two should chase 600,000? How is it possible, in other words, that the Jews in that situation will be unable to give any resistance at all to the enemy? The only reason is in Lo Kitzur Macharav Hashem is Giram. It's only because God Tzalon Hashem is Giram. In other words, that it was all something from the Ashgacha. The downfall will represent the Ashgacha. And then the pasuk, then the psukim mentioned that finally, kiyodin linakam that kiyodin Hashem amo is mentions about the final geula, about the final geula. So that ultimately God will redeem them. So, finally, the Shira ends with the redemption of Klal Yisrael. Now, some wanted to say, as I mentioned before, that this is referring to the Holocaust, the whole incident and the whole description over here, the Achris Hayamim and the terrible tragedy, and. From the framework of history, I'm not saying that if you have a sense of history, I'm not saying that such a thing is impossible, because certainly it's the greatest tragedy that ever befell Klal Yisrael. There's no question about it. If you have any sense of history, you realize that it's something which is quite possible that Torah is referring to. It's a possibility. You have to understand that in this area, as I said before, like the Rambam says, we don't have any definite knowledge. But to say that such a thing is a possibility is not outside the realm of reason. After all, you have the klolos, the tochacha, in the end of Vayikra refers to Churban Bayis Rishon, and the ones in Kisavo refer to Churban Bayis Sheni. So these were, from a historical standpoint, great tragedies that occurred to Klal Yisrael, and certainly the Holocaust is not inferior. As a matter of fact, it certainly is greater than those tragedies in terms of magnitude and atrocities. I mean, it is certainly possible to say that the Torah is referring to that. We don't know because it's Dvarim Stumim Eitzel Hanaviim. And anyone that has this, that feels that they want to project onto the situation and say that that's what it is, the person has that emotion, they should recognize from where that source of the emotion comes. But simultaneously, if you look at it rationally, you could say, as a matter of conjecture, that it's possible. It is possible to say that. From a rational standpoint, it's possible to say that. The only thing I say is there are people that mention that maintain that is so, and I don't say that it's not so. The only thing is that if you want to be consistent with that idea, and you want to say that that's what it is, then you have to also accept the other psukim, because the other psukim say, the same psukim that mentioned this tragedy, say the reason, mention the reason for the tragedy. It says then the Chorapi Baba Yamu Vazafim Vistarati Fonem Vayalechol Matzu Rose Rabbos Vitzaros. Then Vomar Bayomahu, Halo Alkein Alahai Bekibi Mitzahunu Yerosela. So it means that the Klal Yisrael will recognize the reason is because somehow or other they've deviated. So, because that's what it says. Vomar Bayomahu, that they will say at that time, that the reason is, so it's Hira Tshuva. Ramban says that was just a Hira Tshuva at first. Then later, it says, that's why it says, Manochi Aster Aster Panabayamu Akolaro Asher Asa Kifona Elohim Acherim. The Pasuk mentions openly the reason is, the reason for the tragedy. So, and every time it mentions tragedy, it says the same thing. Kavienu Adamash Nishbat Lavas Zavaschol Vadvash Vachol Vasov Adosh Nifona Elohim Acherim Vavodim Vin Yatsuni Vehefres Brisi. Voya Kisim Senel Sor Ros Rabbis Vatsaras Vansashir Zos Tchonu Vahe. So that they should try to understand that the purpose of the writing down Hazinu was so that when it does occur, they should look into the situation and understand it, and they should do tshuva. So if you want to say that the Torah is referring to the Holocaust, then you must say first of all that you see from the Torah itself that nothing occurs to the people. It's especially clear that nothing occurs to the people without the Hashgacha, without the cause of the Tzaras Rabbos V'Ros, which is the chait of Klal Yisrael. So if you can't say that this is a reference to the Holocaust and simultaneously reject the other part of the Pesukim. That's an absurdity. And if that's the case, then what I said last week, you must accept that. I mean, you can't. It's paramount. It's an ikar bedos. That's an ikar bedos, and that's written all over the Torah. That if a tragedy occurs to Klal Yisrael, it's not the mikra, but it's because of the chait of Klal Yisrael. If we should say that the Holocaust, in fact, is, even if it's not what is alluded to in the Torah, still it has to be because of the chait of Klal Yisrael, because that's clear and called Torah Kula. Mm-hmm. I'm saying the, if you're going to say that the psukim are referring to the Holocaust, then it must be because of then the Torah does say specifically in that specific instance that it's certainly because of the chatayim of the klal, which would mean that if that is the case, then the purpose of the writing of Hazinu is that the nation will one day, Bayomahu could be a day, Bayomahu could be a long day, that somewhere in that day of history, the Jews will understand the chait that brought about the Holocaust. And that understanding and that knowledge will be something that will raise them to a higher level, bring them to tshuva, and will bring about the final stage of the Yachas Hayomim. Now I'm not averse to saying that is true. It's certainly a possibility, and it may be so. But you cannot. It is what bothers me. What disturbs me is that people do not wish to recognize that concept. That the and that I believe is keneged kol ha'Torah kula. To say that it just occurred and wasn't due to the chatayim of Klal Yisrael is keneged the whole kol ha'Torah kula. It's almost, I mean, kfirah. Of course, it's very difficult for people to say it today because it is as if, first of all, for two reasons, as I mentioned yesterday. First of all, because of the fact that the people of this generation identify with the previous generation, and it's very hard for a person psychologically to reflect and to understand their own chatoyim, and especially it would lead to a tremendous condemnation, and also it's a condemnation of a past generation. And when a person is a victim, the only thing that the person has left is sympathy. And that's really the only thing a victim has. The last thing they have left is sympathy. And to say that the person that these people were, that to say that it was because of chatoyim people feel tends to take away from the sympathy of the situation. Say that they were chatoim, means to say, oh, they deserved it. You can't be insensitive and say such a thing. That's why at this time, I mean, the approach is, you'll never see an approach like that. But basically what I'm saying is that in conformity with Torah, we have to understand that you cannot say otherwise, because otherwise what you're saying is that the Ashgacha is wrong, and that there was a tremendous onus for Klal Yisrael, and this is God's fault, it's an injustice. That's an impossibility. And the whole Yisod of Yadis is against that idea. And the whole Torah is against that idea. That's why, as difficult as it may be for us to accept such a concept, but I think we have to be able to accept the framework as being the correct one. It is because of Achatoyim. What the chait is, we don't know. We're not great enough to understand. I mean, we need a great Chachovim, Chachmei Yisrael, to uncover what the chait really was. We don't know what the chait was at this point. But we shouldn't deny that there was a chait. If we deny that there was a chait, then we have to say, ipso facto, that God was unjust. And that is really, then you're really being kofar in the whole idea of the bris between God and Klal Yisrael. So it's only one of two ways, logically. And we know from the Torah what the correct way is.
That idea
is the most common idea. The most common idea about the Holocaust is that the reason is that in order that the state of Israel should be created. First of all, to say such a thing is really even a human being would not consider that to be any kind of justice. To decimate and to destroy and to have such human suffering take place, and the people that suffer should die in order that others later should have Eretz Yisrael. I mean, this doesn't seem to be in line with any sense of justice that we have. And in the beginning of Azino, it's interesting, in the beginning of Azino, Moshe Rabbeinu, before he even starts to talk about this whole concept, he says, Hatzur Tomen Polo, Kichol Drachov Mishpat, Kel Emuna Ve'ein Ovel, Tzadik V'yosher, Shiches Lo, Bonav Muma. That the reason for the, and Targum Unklus says, that chabilu lahon lo lay. It means that when the Jews are corrupt, they aren't affecting God, they're affecting themselves. And benayo diflochu l'tavosa dora dashniu uvodoi v'eshtaniu. It is they that are the cause. If there is a tragedy, who are the ones that caused it? Klal Yisrael. That's the beginning, the opening statements of Hazino. And to say that people should be destroyed, tortured, and suffer in order that these people should die, in order that another people should have the land of Eretz Yisrael, I mean, this just doesn't make any type of sense whatsoever. It's against Kol HaTorah Kula, really. To say that certain people should die in order that others should enjoy life. What kind of justice is that? The pasuk says that lo yimsu avos habonim, bono yimsu avos. I mean, this is crazy. But of course, people are groping for an answer, and they look for that. I mean, one time I mentioned the story that the Rav one time said about Reb Chaim, that in the 1880s there were tremendous pogroms. So somebody came to Reb Chaim and they told him that terrible massacre occurred and a horrible thing, many people were killed. So the one that told Reb Chaim said, at least if we would know that this was Ikfas and Mashiach, at least if we would know that the reason these tragedies occurred is because it's the signs of the coming of the Mashiach. So Reb Chaim says, Chas v'shalom, he says. You're not allowed to say that. He says, we wouldn't give up one Jewish life for Mashiach. There's nowhere to say that we, that nowhere in the Torah to say that we should give up a Jewish life, one Jewish life, in order that Mashiach should come. Never. We wouldn't be permitted to do such a thing. So, to say that that millions of Jewish lives were destroyed in order that Eretz Yisrael should come about, this is vicious to say, plain vicious to say such a thing. So that answer really doesn't hold any ground. It doesn't hold any water. If you think into it, it's just nonsensical, and it's connected all the ideas that the Torah tells us about justice. It's an absurdity. But tzaddikim nifasim b'avon ador, a few reasons for it. Tzaddikim nifasim b'avon ador, first of all, it means that the tzaddikim are responsible for the avon ador, because they are the leaders of the generation, and they're the ones that should have they assume a certain amount of responsibility for the avon ador. That's one thing. Another pshat, tzaddikim nifasim b'avon ador, means that they themselves are nitfas in the avon ador. Affects them also. They can't escape the effects of the Avon Adar many times. And the idea that Misa Sadikim is a Machaper has to do with a different idea. The fact that it affects the people in a certain way. That many times the Misa of a Tzadik affects the people in a way that it causes them to do tshuva. But not that the Tzadik is singled out because he's a Tzadik and he's destroyed for the because of this, there should be a that he should be a kapara for the generation. That is not our idea. Doesn't mean that's the reason that God killed him. And man is a tzaddik, so God's going to kill him, so he should be a scapegoat for others. What kind of justice is that? It means that it's a kapara because the people, when they, many times the people are attached to a the Gemara says that tzaddikim accomplish more through their death many times. Also means, like you see, it's a dome, and then so this dome, asar tzaddikim. But less than that, sometimes when the kibbutz shenit and gemara says kibbutz shenit and neshes lamashkes, ain't a mafkum ain't tov l'ra. That once the plague is out, so then even the individuals who are righteous, there's no differentiation. That's a different idea, it's a different concept, but not the concept that any individual is singled out as a sacrifice. That's really a pagan idea. There was a separation among the Shiftei Kah, because the ones that were from Rachel and Leah looked down at the other ones that were from Bilhah and Zilpah. And therefore God said that I'll make you all of Adam, so there won't be any differentiation. And apparently what it means is that as long as there was a differentiation, Klal Yisrael never could have been built, because there would be they'd have a stigma attached to certain Jews. And that wasn't supposed to be that way. That's why they were chayev and avdus. All of them were chayev and avdus. But it's a chazal. But just that people should suffer in order that other people should have the good, and that's not a concept in Klal Yisrael. Yes. So then, if you say that there is a reference, so then you have to say vayah bayomaho, that eventually bayomaho is a long time, could be generations and generations. Maybe it'll be a generation maybe this generation is too close to the event to be able to. To be involved in such a reflection, but eventually they will be able to. You see, Chazal explained the Churban HaBayis many years after the Churban HaBayis. Chazal explained it. Couldn't be explained at the time. It could require centuries to pass by in order that an evaluation should be able to take place. But the approach has to be that there is, even now, a person has to know that there definitely was something wrong, that a person has to realize there's something wrong.
Okay.
The Adani Meshach, the Gemara says, that you can't say, and when you come to the house of Noble, you can't say, everybody usually says it. They say, what can we do? What can we do? It's terrible, you know, what can we do? Because that's Kfira. Because you're saying that if I could do something, I would bring that person back to life. Which means less than life. God isn't just. God killed him unjustly. That's an intimation. And certainly over here, we're confronted with the same problem. Definitely, what the ideas that are being presented are dangerous because they're denying the Hashgacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But simultaneously, I say that it's something which, you know, is great sensitivity here. You have to be a great chacham. Everybody shouldn't just jump in here. But you should know yourself what the truth is with regard to this. That people are really in a tremendous conflict and contradiction, especially a religious person. Because a religious person who maintains that it was unjust, I mean, has to maintain that the Hashgacha wasn't fair. That's an impossibility. The person who's going to be killed has to use every means at his disposal to save his life. You see also when they wanted to kill the Shem Yechai ran away. Shem Yechai. It's against halacha to stay. Suicide is ritzicha. So what that piyut means is metaphorically. Because the piyut is trying to answer the question of how could it happen to such great people. And the answer of the piyut is that it was impossible not to happen. That's the answer of the piyut. That's the piyut. The Python says, Zutar v'zuschara, and then God said to them that Emeshma davaracha epoch ha'olam mamayim, the soul of O Oshis Adamayim. Means to say that it is impossible that the way the format of Briyas Olam was created, that this had to occur. It would mean that God would have to change the natural law, and there couldn't be any natural law. That's what it means. That it was an impossibility. It was one of the two. Either there would not be Briyas Shemayim Va'aretz, or else it had to occur. That's what the Python is trying to answer. But I don't think it's literal that it means the Olam Amorim. That what it means is that he understood. Ki bezos aten mokadim means he understood that this is the way it has to be. Not literally that he went up and then he came down and he said, this is it, we're staying here. That's not what it means. It's a different idea. It means that he understood that this is the way it has to be. That's what the Python is trying to say. There's one thing I will mention with regard to your question. And that is, the question is, how much did the Jews as a nation participate in their own destruction? You see? That is the question. That is the big question. How much did the Jews participate in their own destruction? That always comes up again and again. They should have fought back. And why did they go like sheep to the slaughter? All these questions. The answer to that question also, according to Yadis, is a specific one, and it's not the one that's commonly heard. Because we maintain in Yadis, like the Pasuk says about David HaMelech, Vayhi David b'chol derech av maskil v'Hashem imo. What does it mean? It means that the Derech HaTorah raises a person to a different plane, where whatever he does with sechel. He has knowledge and he has insight. And therefore he operates in the sphere of Chachmah. When he works in the sphere of Chachmah, you see, that is not enough to assure his success. Because even the greatest Chacham is not in control of all the factors that are in existence. But what is responsible for his success? Varoshem Imo. You see? It's true. David, Vayi David, Bechol Drach of Moscow. Right? So he went according to laws of Sechel. But the reason for his success was not because, solely because he was a Baal Sechel. Because Sechel could work. And there are instances, of course, where people simply by using Sechel achieve great success. This is not contrary to the Torah. But to have the type of success that David HaMelech had, which is out of the ordinary, that requires more than just that he's on the same wavelength of Chochmah, he's on a certain wavelength of Chochmah and Sechel, but it has to be Vadashem Imam. Okay? And similarly, That's what it says in Hazina with regard to the downfall of Klal Yisrael, where it says that the other nations, if they would only understand, it says Lu Chochmu Yaskilu Kol Zos. If they were only intelligent, they would understand this. Eicha Yirdof Echad Elef Ushnayim Anisa Ravava. How is it possible that one person should chase 1,000 and two 10,000? That's an impossibility. Numerically, it doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't make any sense even in the first instance. So, what does the pasuk say? What is the pasuk telling you? Imlo kitzuram mecharam v'Hashem isgiram. If it wasn't because of the hand of God was operating in their downfall, which means to say that when the people stray from the path of the Torah. And from the way of the Torah, that what's responsible, that there's two things involved in their downfall. They themselves, of course, are involved in their own downfall, but more than that, they bring about a situation where the Ashgacha itself is involved in their downfall. Just like when a person lives according to the way of Torah, so the Ashgacha is involved in bringing about a success. The contrary is also true. That when the people deviate from the way of the Torah, that the Ashgacha is involved in bringing about their downfall. So the question is, could it have been averted, and how much did we participate in our own destruction? The answer is that both are true. That we participated in our own destruction because we left the Derech HaTorah. Once we did that, then the Ashgacha participated. So to say that if we, so to say, to attribute it to just our own shortcoming is wrong, because there definitely was Ashgacha involved in the downfall. So they can't say that if they would have done this, they would have been saved. See, that's not true, because the Ashgacha participated in the downfall. And lo kitzura macharam v'Hashem esgivam. That's what the pasuk says. Like I said, it partially answers your question. It's wrong to say that if we would have done such and such, it would have averted. What you have to say is not if we would have done such and such, we would have averted the catastrophe. If we would have lived according to the Derech HaTorah, then we would have averted the catastrophe. That's the only thing that you could say. Can't say if this isolated, if we would have acted this way, we would have averted, because that's all part of the whole picture. It's all part of the whole picture. The whole picture is a deviation from Torah. That it is not accidental. Something that falls by Israel and evil is not accidental. Is the whole idea behind the Masechta Tainus and the halachas of Tzom and the all? It's the Yesod Hadas. It's the Pesukim in the Torah. Selchu Mikeri. The whole that's the Yesod Hadas. But to say when a person starts feeling precisely knows how God is working and it makes too much sense to him. That's already a bad sign. Then it's a sign that he's just projecting his emotions onto the same. Yadis never had such a thing. We don't know precisely. The only thing we know is because God gave us Haftacha that when something occurs to something the false by Israel, we know that it's because of their chait that it occurred. Torah says so. That's how we know that we have to do tshuva, and we know that we have to return to the Derech HaYashar. But what you're talking about is the way people feel that they know precisely. According to their idea, there are many other chatan that are going on that should also be taken care of. But and I'm not saying that it's not. It could be. It's possible. A person can't say. But you cannot. That sense that the people have that they know exactly, that is not the proper attitude. That's not the proper answer. It's possible. The Dvarim Stumim Heim Eitzel HaNeviim. Why did the Torah really, in Daniel, why did the Torah hide exactly how the Kates will come about? According to the Rambam, there's a very good reason. A very good reason, because if people would know when the Kates is, since people do have this primitive emotion, so it would be very harmful to the people. It would be very harmful to the people. Let's say the people would know Mashiach's not going to come for another 2,000 years. So these people, because of that fact, you see, will have a certain might be lost. They might be lost. Might be going to be lost. Then again, the people know that Mashiach, the people in the generation that Mashiach is going to come, know he's going to come soon. That's also bad, because then their whole avoda will not be even on the level of Europe. So therefore, you see that there is a good reason that there should be a stimas haketz. There should be a stimas haketz. That's why the Navi really. That's where the Navi really hid when the case is going to come, because of the fact that people have these emotions. But the thing that's unfortunate about it is that you see that people somehow or other can't manage to escape from it. I mean, wherever you have someone that tries to influence the people, he always brings in his ally of Mashiach. Somehow or other. Somehow or other. He appears on the scene. Yes. That's right. Yeah.
Right.
When Yaakov wanted to reveal the case, you have to understand why. When Yaakov wanted to reveal the case, it shows you something about the idea of the case. It shows you that a very great person, will have one thing. The Torah says. The Torah says the pasuk. The pasuk in the Torah says. The pasuk says. Heosvu v'agidu lachem eis asher yikro eschem ba'acharis hayomim. Yaakov said, he says, gather around and I'll tell you what's going to happen to you in the end of days. Which means to say the ultimate geula. Now, then it says that, then Chazal say that he was, it was taken away from him. Nestaka menu, it was taken away from him and was unable to reveal. What is that story telling you? What is the event telling you? What it's telling you is, that first of all, two things. First of all, that a really great person is able to see the case. Is able to see the case. Because it takes a tremendously great individual to be able to comprehend the whole Chochmah in order that he should be able to have an idea of what the case is. Have an idea what the case is. Now, such an individual can really have knowledge pertaining to the case. I'm not saying he has detailed knowledge. I don't believe he has detailed knowledge, because detailed knowledge is only God could have that type of knowledge. Man is incapable of such knowledge. But a person who is on a very high level has more knowledge, has a certain knowledge, I should say, of what the case is. Has a certain knowledge of what the case is. The type of philosophical knowledge, a type of insight. That he could describe certain things about the case that other people don't know. But on his level, this idea is not harmful. On his level, the idea is not harmful. As a matter of fact, it fits into his whole scheme of knowledge, and it's a part of his knowledge. However, when these facts that he has due to his knowledge are transmitted to someone else who is not on his level, immediately those same facts become dangerous. Because since the person is not on that level to have that vision, see, the vision is very good for the person that's on the level. For him, it's a good thing, because he has the knowledge and he has the proper attitude of the soul to be able to relate to that idea. And for him, it doesn't interfere. As a matter of fact, it forms part of his perfection. However, for those who receive the facts from that vision, for them not being on the level, they attach their emotions to it, and it's harmful. And that's really what the incident in Vayechi is. That really, Yaakov Avinu was on the level. Where he saw with his chokhmah, with his nevuah, he was able to see what the achas hayomim. He was able to have a vision of the achas hayomim because of his level, and for him it was part of his perfection. It was a direct expression of his perfection. However, God did not permit him to transmit it to his sons. Why? Because in the transmission would be lost the perfection, and what would happen would be that it would be harmful. What he would transmit, those ideas would be harmful for the ones that are receiving them, because they're not on the level to have that vision. In order to have that vision of the Achas HaYomim, you require a gavra that's capable of having that vision, and they were not capable. He thought they were capable. That's why he said he thought that they were on a level that was that they were capable of receiving it, but the Ashgacha said otherwise, and that's why immediately he started to talk differently. and it wasn't able to reveal what was going to happen. Yeah. Yeah. The idea of Mashiach, why Mashiach essentially, I mentioned before, because the idea of Yemos HaMashiach means that God will not allow this part of the of His creation to remain in a state of imperfection, which means that eventually mankind will fall in line with the perfection of the entire universe, because the entire universe Osa Shalom B'Mromov. What does Shalom B'Mromov mean? It means that the in the like Eve says in the Marechas HaShemayim, in the universe there's harmony, because all of nature is in harmony except for man, because man has free will and therefore he lives in disharmony. However, this state of affairs will not continue to exist eternally. There's a reason why it has to exist for a temporary state, temporary being a long period of time, but it, nevertheless, it's a time that will come to a conclusion. The idea of Yemos HaMashiach means that eventually the whole world will be in a state of perfection and harmony in line with the entire universe, because God's creation cannot be without perfection. It's without perfection now, but it cannot ultimately be without perfection. That's the concept of Mashiach. That's why I say Osa Shalom B'Mromov. It means that there's harmony in the heavens. It means among the other creation. It means among the universe, among the Malachim. Hu Yaseh Shalom Oleinu V'Kol Yisrael, which means to say Shalom is harmony. That's why it says Shalom is God's, is Chosomo, is Shem Hashem, is Shalom. So now I say Shalom Aleichem in the morning for Tefillah, because Shalom is God's name. Why? Because God represents the source of an entire harmony that exists in the whole universe. But we are in a disharmonious state because of our Bechira. So Bechira, the concept of Bechira dictates that the harmony should be disturbed. However, the idea of Mashiach is that the harmony will not be disturbed permanently. That's why the idea of Mashiach is a part of the Yesod HaDas. However, we differ from the other nations in precisely what we spoke about. The details are not an ikkar. That's why the Rambam says the details are not an ikkar, because the attraction to the details is an alien emotional attraction, which really stems from a primitive part of man, and that's the idea of Mashiach that the other nations have. You see, our idea of Mashiach is a different one. Our idea of Mashiach is a philosophical idea, which is the Yesod HaDas, whereas their idea of Mashiach is just an attraction to a certain fantasy, and the desire for a person to be involved in the details is where the fantasy expresses itself, because the fantasy wants details. Fantasy is not satisfied with just remaining abstract. It wants to know when, how, where. Oh, the signs are here, we're coming, huh? The fantasy moves the person, but the philosophical idea doesn't. So our idea of Mashiach is, and that's why the Rambam says, "Well, you see, main ikker." This is not. Why does the Rambam say it shouldn't be an ikker? Precisely in contradistinction to set off the idea, to set off this concept with the idea that Mashiach is an ikker. Mashiach is an ikker because it's a philosophical principle. That's why it's an ikker. It's not an ikker to be catered to the emotions. And the moment you have the details, the investigation details, you're catering to the emotions. Yes. To elaborate more, the difference between Yiras Onesh, Yiras Onesh, and between the idea of Mashiach. In other words, what the difference is between the two. You see, I would say this, that the idea of Mashiach, the attraction, the primitive attraction to Mashiach, at the bottom of that attraction is the idea of the satisfaction of a person's innermost primitive fantasies. See? That is a harmful thing. That is a harmful thing.
Right.
That's right. It is trying to satisfy a certain primitive fantasy that he has. Very infantile, unconscious fantasy. That type of thing is not something which is going to direct them. You see, in Yiras HaOnesh, there is no satisfaction for the ultimate emotional instinctual force. And as long as there's no satisfaction for that ultimate instinctual force, the energies are free to be. He's frustrated enough so that the energies are free to be used, to be raised to a higher level. And the Yiras HaOnesh is not really satisfying his primitivism, you see? However, in the idea of Mashiach, with the detail, the idea with Mashiach where he's attracted to the details, there he's really satisfying a very primitive emotion. And he's not aware of what he's doing. He's satisfying a primitive unconscious desire. Once he's on that wavelength, he completely avoids the whole any type of perfection. He's completely overcome by this unconscious satisfaction. Whereas in Yiras HaOnesh, there's enough rationale to place him in a position where he can grow out of the Yiras HaOnesh state into a state where he's Oved Me'ava, where he serves God because he recognizes the good itself and not because of the side benefits. But in that situation, he can change from the lower to the higher. He can progress. Whereas in the other situation, where he's under the influence of satisfying this ultimate fantasy, the fantasy captivates all his energies, and there's no room for him to improve. He's not on any wavelength of improvement. He is attracted to the fantasy, and that's where he's going to stay. He's not going to move. Whereas the other way, he's not really satisfying a tremendous unconscious fantasy. He's just trying to avoid. He fears harm. He's trying to avoid. But it's not something that's overpowering his whole essence, his whole psychological makeup. There, he could eventually graduate from the lower level to the higher level. Whereas in the Mashiach fantasy, he can't. He's just going to stay in that fantasy, and that's it.
By Yiras Hashem, really, although it's a desire to stay away from the bad, still that doesn't solve his fantasy without the good.
Exactly. It's still a frustrating situation. Frustrating enough and rational enough to be able to permit him to rise to a higher level. The other one is completely overcome. Yeah, that's... You see, Mashiach, the philosophical idea of Mashiach, really, what is paramount? What is paramount in the philosophical idea of Mashiach? What's really paramount? What is paramount in the philosophical idea of Mashiach is one thing. The concept of Malchus HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's really what is... Yeah, people make a mistake, and I'll show you again, you'll see... Depending upon what the idea of Mashiach is, you'll be able to tell what wavelength the person is on. If the person's idea of Mashiach, the main idea of Mashiach, is really for himself, you see, and for his own benefit, that's why he wants Mashiach, you see, that's what's attracting him, then you know he's in the primitive idea. That's the primitive Mashiach. The philosophical principle of Mashiach is that it will be that will be what will be revealed is the Malchus HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what you say in the Tfilis, the whole Malchus, the Yeda Kafol. So what is really the most prominent feature of Mashiach? Not us. The most prominent feature of Mashiach is the Kiddush Ein Shemayim, Tzilchat Tichar Kol Baruch Tishav Kol Loshon. That really is what. That's the most prominent feature of the idea of Mashiach. If a person is attracted to that, you see, then he's on the right wavelength for Mashiach. But I don't think that most of the people that are running around looking for Mashiach are really so concerned about that. You see, it's basically their own state that they're relating to, and that shows you again that they're involved in the primitive concept of Mashiach, not the philosophical concept. And that's really the Kaddish, the way the Rambam's gist was the Omo is Galias Kaddish Shemei Rabba, the Omo Divro, the Yatzmach Perkone Vikar of Mashiach. The Yatzmach Perkone Vikar of Mashiach. That was the Rambam's gist, right? I mean, it's the Sfarish gist. That's right. Vikar of Mashiach. So we're talking about Mashiach. The Bechayechon of Yomechon, Bechayechon of Beis Israel, Bagol of Zman Karev, the Imru. Then you have Yehei Shmei Rabba Mavarach La'olam Alom Me'omaya. What is Yehei Shmei Rabba Mavarach La'olam Alom Me'omaya? And the Gemara says that's the main tefillah. Kolom Yehei Shmei Rabba B'chol Kocho. That's the whole essence. That's the greatest tefillah. Why? Yehei Shmei Rabba Mavarach La'olam Me'omaya is a Kiddush Shema Agadol. So you see the Kaddish sets forth the whole idea of Mashiach and what the idea of Mashiach is supposed to result in. Supposed to result in Yehei Shmei Rabba Mavarach La'olam Alom Me'omaya. That's really what. And that tefillah is the most important tefillah. And a person who says that b'chol kocho, why does the Gemara say a person says that b'chol kocho, that this is the greatest thing? because it's very difficult for a person to say it b'chol kocho, because it really is something that's a philosophical principle that requires a tremendous level for a person to really have such kavana about that idea, that he should be so concerned about the idea of Malchus HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a very high level. But that is the real, the Kaddish sets forth the real idea of Mashiach, the philosophical principle of Mashiach. That's the, there you see in the Tefillah the way Chazal formulated it. Not the attraction that the Hamon Am has, which is completely distorted, which is what the Rambam says.